Just two partial skeletons and a number of isolated limb bones. Something as short-lived as our own civilization would almost certainly not be known from the fossil record at all. In Europe, Tattersall offers by way of illustration, you've got hominid skulls in Georgia dated to about 1.7 million years ago, but then you have a gap of almost a million years before the next remains turn up in Spain, right on the other side of the continent. And then you've got another 300,000-year gap before you get a Homo heidelbergensis in Germany, and none of them looks terribly much like any of the others. He smiled. It's from these kinds of fragmentary pieces that you're trying to work out the history of entire species. It's quite a tall order. We really have very little idea of the relationships between many ancient species, which led to us and which were evolutionary dead ends. Some probably don't deserve to be regarded as separate species at all. It is the patchiness of the record that makes each new find look so sudden and distinct from all the others. If we had tens of thousands of skeletons distributed at regular intervals through the historical record, there would be appreciably more degrees of shading. Whole new species don't emerge instantaneously, as the fossil record implies, but gradually out of other existing species. The closer you go back to a point of divergence, the closer the similarities are, so that it becomes exceedingly difficult and sometimes impossible to distinguish a late Homo erectus from an early Homo sapiens, since it is likely to be both and neither. Similar disagreements can often arise over questions of identification from fragmentary remains, deciding, for instance, whether a particular bone represents a female Australopithecus boisei or a male Homo habilis. With so little to be certain about, scientists often have to make assumptions based on other objects found nearby, and these may be little more than valiant guesses. As Alan Walker and Pat Shipman have dryly observed, if you correlate tool discovery with the species of creature most often found nearby, you would have to conclude that early hand tools were mostly made by antelopes. Perhaps nothing better typifies the confusion than the fragmentary bundle of contradictions that was Homo habilis. Simply put, habilis bones make no sense. When arranged in sequence, they show males and females evolving at different rates and in different directions, the males becoming less ape-like and more human with time, while females from the same period appear to be moving away from humanness toward greater apeness. Some authorities don't believe habilis is a valid category at all. Tattersall and his colleague Jeffrey Schwartz dismiss it as a mere wastebasket species, one into which unrelated fossils could be conveniently swept. Even those who see habilis as an independent species don't agree on whether it is of the same genus as us or is from a side branch that never came to anything. Finally, but perhaps above all, human nature is a factor in all this. Scientists have a natural tendency to interpret finds in the way that most flatters their stature. It is a rare paleontologist indeed who announces that he has found a cache of bones, but that they are nothing to get excited about. Or as John Reeder understandably observes in the book Missing Links, it is remarkable how often the first interpretations of new evidence have confirmed the preconceptions of its discoverer. All this leaves ample room for arguments, of course, and nobody likes to argue more than paleoanthropologists. And of all the disciplines in science, paleoanthropology boasts perhaps the largest share of egos, say the authors of the recent Java Man, a book, it may be noted, that itself devotes long, wonderfully unself-conscious passages to attacks on the inadequacies of others, in particular the author's former close colleague, Donald Johansson. Here is a small sampling. In our years of collaboration at the Institute, he, Johansson, developed a well-deserved, if unfortunate, reputation for unpredictable and high-decibel personal verbal assaults, sometimes accompanied by the tossing around of books or whatever else came conveniently to hand. So, bearing in mind that there is little you can say about human prehistory that won't be disputed by someone somewhere, other than that we most certainly had one, what we think we know about who we are and where we come from is roughly this. For the first 99.99999% of our history as organisms, we were in the same ancestral line as chimpanzees. Virtually nothing is known about the prehistory of chimpanzees, but whatever they were, we were. Then, about 7 million years ago, something major happened. A group of new beings emerged from the tropical forests of Africa and began to move about on the open savanna. These were the Australopithecines, and for the next 5 million years they would be the world's dominant hominid species. Austral is from the Latin for southern and has no connection in this context to Australia. Australopithecines came in several varieties, some slender and gracile, like Raymond Dart's town child, others more sturdy and robust, but all were capable of walking upright. Some of these species existed for well over 1 million years, others for a more modest few hundred thousand. But it is worth bearing in mind that even the least successful had histories many times longer than we have yet achieved. The most famous hominid remains in the world are those of a 3.18 million-year-old Australopithecine found at Heydar in Ethiopia in 1974 by a team led by Donald Johansson. Formerly known as AL, for a far locality, 288-1, the skeleton became more familiarly known as Lucy, after the Beatles song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Johansson has never doubted her importance. "She is our earliest ancestor, the missing link between ape and human," he has said. Lucy was tiny, just 3.5 feet tall. She could walk, though how well is a matter of some dispute. She was evidently a good climber, too. Much else is unknown. Her skull was almost entirely missing, so little could be said with confidence about her brain size, though skull fragments suggested it was small. Most books describe Lucy's skeleton as being 40% complete, though some put it closer to half, and one produced by the American Museum of Natural History describes Lucy as two-thirds complete. The BBC television series Ape Man actually called it a complete skeleton, even while showing that it was anything but. A human body has 206 bones, but many of these are repeated. If you have the left femur from a specimen, you don't need the right to know its dimensions. Strip out all the redundant bones, and the total you're left with is 120, what is called a half skeleton. Even by this fairly accommodating standard, and even counting the slightest fragment as a full bone, Lucy constituted only 28% of a half skeleton, and only